honestly, it took me a long time to recognize that there is more to life than work. And there is this quote that says, if you want to be first rate at your work, work can't be all that you are.
Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia, the unexpected stories of Asia's disruptors. I'm your host, Chong Xiaowei. Every week, we talk with a young leader about the crazy smart approaches they're taking to achieve success and tackle some of the biggest issues facing Asia today. Now cast your mind back. It's 2009. You're blasting Black Eyed Peas' I Got a Feeling or Lady Gaga's Just Dance. You've started a side hustle with two friends while still in school. It's a fashion blog shop. Internet shopping hasn't taken off yet, but you're earning coins and you're pumped. Armed with the insight that international brands don't make clothes for Asian women's shape, stature, or style, you asked your mom for a life-changing loan to drop out of university to build your own fashion label. Fast forward to more than a decade later, and the business is now a multi-million dollar fashion empire, catering specifically to helping Asian women feel good about the way they dress. This week, I'm speaking to a pioneer of e-commerce, the co-founder of Love Bonito, Rachel Lim. Rachel joins us to share how she's built Singapore's fastest growing fashion brand from scratch, why timing is everything when it comes to having difficult conversations, and why an email from her husband titled A Cry for Help changed everything. Here's our conversation. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia.
Hi, so excited to be here.
So usually when we kick off our conversation for Crazy Smart Asia, we will go for a round of quick fire questions.
Wow, intense. Okay, yes. I'm ready.
Okay, so first question, do you have a mantra in life?
Do I have a mantra in life?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I think I have a mantra in different seasons of my life.
Okay.
Depending on also what I'm going through, you know, and what I really need that extra push and encouragement for. So I think my mantra this season, it's not so much a mantra, but really a phrase that I hold true to. It's daring greatly. And for me, it's such a reminder to face my life's uncertainty, challenges bravely, not be afraid to try new things, and even, you know, go out of my comfort zone to explore the territory. So I think that for me is what I'm focused on this season.
Oh, I like that. Okay. Yeah. And what's the first thing you do when you wake up?
What's the first thing I do when I wake up? I check on the baby camera to see if the kids are still asleep. Yeah, so that's the first thing I do when I wake up.
And your one guilty pleasure?
Oh, chocolate. Anything chocolate.
Anything?
Anything. I'm a huge fan of chocolates, and it can come in different forms, right? Whether in a drink or in like cakes or dessert or just chocolate in its own form. And also, I don't like to share my chocolate. So if I ever offer you, Xiaowei, please don't take it.
It's a trick question,
it
right?
It is a trick question, me. Yes.
Okay, so let's go a little bit into your life story since we need to set context. So you are the second of three children. You grew up with two brothers, right?
Yes.
Your mom worked as a secretary and your dad was a shipbroker. And at one point when you were still in school, you and two friends, Viola and Velda, right?
Viola and Velda, yeah.
Yeah, you guys started selling pre-loved clothes to earn a little bit of pocket money. But you also mentioned that this all happened during a difficult time for your family, right?
Yeah.
What was happening at home and how did that spur you business-wise?
That's a great summary. For me, back then, when I came out to, you know, just do Bonito Chico on a live journal platform, selling our pre-loved clothes on the site with Viola and Velda, this was when we were still in school, like JC, maybe the final, the 2 years of JC. And then after that, you know, the business took off. And then we ran out of clothes to sell, ran out of pre-loved clothes to sell. So we decided to use the money that we had saved to go overseas to import clothes to sell. Mm. So that was what we were doing for a bit. And then there was momentum built back then. This was 18, 19 years ago now, you know.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a long while, way before social media started, you know. Yeah. Back then, how people were wiring money was through ATM transfer. Then they would scan the receipts to us and send it over email because no smartphones, right? Yeah. So those were really the early days. And there really was a gap in the market for affordable, great-looking pieces made for primarily the Asian women, like ourselves. We have different body proportion, different needs. For example, for the longest time, I thought that I couldn't wear trousers because my hips were too big, my legs were too short. But I realized after that, oh, it was because the international brands that were coming to Asia were primarily created for American European women who have very different body proportions from us. So in my final year of university, we decided to drop out of school to co-start the business proper on a dot-com platform and to start designing and manufacturing our own pieces. Yeah. So that was when Love Bonito was born. This was in 2010. Mm. Now, backtrack a little bit, right? So in 2009, I was still in school, and because I was bonded to the government, in order to drop out of school, I needed to pay a five-figure sum to the government to break my bond to come out to start the business proper.
Yeah.
And well, you know, that was a tough time because obviously I didn't have that sum of money. And that was the year of financial crisis and my dad was going through bankruptcy. Mm. And my mom was already working two jobs to support the family. So I did not have anyone else to turn to. So I just went to my mom and asked if she could loan me a five-figure sum to pay off the bond so that I can drop out of school to start Love Bonito properly with Viola and Velda.
Yeah.
And it was a really tough time because I realized after that the money that I needed was actually my mom's entire life savings that she had left. And it was a really tough time, but I think, you know, she also saw how there was momentum being built in the business. But I think beyond that, there's also some fear in her, right? She was wondering, like, what is online shopping about? Why are people wiring money to you before they see or even receive their goods? You know, I think she was really worried because back then, 2010, online shopping isn't like what it is now. This was 2009. Online shopping isn't like what it is now. She was asking me like, oh, will the government come after you? You know, is what you're doing legal? And I think, you know, as we all know by now, I'm so grateful that she really took that leap of faith to invest in me stopping school to start the business proper. So, yeah that was a really... I would say kind of one of the early make or break times in the journey. Yeah.
It's amazing that, I mean, she had a lot of questions. She had a lot of doubt in her mind, but still she actually loaned you the money.
Mm.
Was there any resistance from her side at all?
There was a lot of resistance, and also from my relatives, right? Mm. Because back then they were telling her like, oh, just let her finish school. It's just 9 more months, you know, get the paper set and she can fall back on it. Ultimately, you know, it's safe. As we know, Asian parents, you just want to...
Singapore parents. Yeah.
Singapore it's parents, common, exactly. It's a common concern, and I recognize and acknowledge that. And so, you know, she was really worried. And actually, I asked her, you know, in the recent years, what made her take that leap of faith in me? Because potentially she could lose everything, you know.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I think as parents, you would always want to, as best as you can, give your kid that one shot in life, you know, to really believe in them. And yeah, I mean, I am forever grateful to my mom for that faith and that trust, even when she had so many questions, like you said, and even when she had so many doubts. And even though it was a pure unknown for her, you know, the online shopping space and things like that. Back then, entrepreneurship isn't like a word like it is today, you know. And I'm really very grateful to her for that, yeah.
Okay, that's amazing.
Mm.
So what do you think, how do you think your relationship has changed ever since then? How has it evolved, the both of you?
My mom has always been sort of, you know, to me, she's always like very involved, so to speak, in the business because I always update her and tell her how it's doing since the beginning, you know. Thankfully, I managed to pay her off the loan that I took from her in the early years as well. So, but, you know, still I've always felt like she was that guardian angel that made it possible for me to come in to be a co-founder of the business. So, you know, I've always like, you know, shared with her the highs, the lows, made her feel as involved as possible in that sense. So yeah, I think for sure I am very, very grateful to my mom. Yeah, for what she has done.
She was your first and biggest investor, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
before you even started fundraising.
Yeah, exactly. So she was that first one that really believed, and gave this a shot.
So let's talk a little bit about your name, actually. So when you first started, you were known as Bonito Chico, which actually meant pretty boy.
Pretty boy in Spanish.
Even though your audience was predominantly women, right?
Yeah.
Or girls. And then in 2010, you mentioned that you started to design your own clothes.
Yes.
You decided to rebrand it to Love Bonito, which is almost like a sign off.
It is.
So at this point in time, it's 14 years later.
Yes.
Have you ever thought of changing that name again?
Yeah. That's a good question. You know, when we first started, we just wanted a fun name. Obviously, we didn't think that it would turn out to be a full-fledged proper business. So Bonito Chico on the Live Journal platform was just a fun name. Like, oh, Bonito Chica actually meant beautiful girl, but we thought Bonito Chico rhymed better.
Yeah.
So we just called it a beautiful boy, right? Bonito Chico in Spanish. And, you know, when we decided in 2010 that we wanted to move to a .com to, like you said, you know, start designing and manufacturing our own line, we wanted to go on bonitochico.com. Mm. But we realized that someone had already cyber-squatted the name and demanded, I think, $20,000 from us. And obviously, we didn't have that sum of money and refused to, you know, give in to that. So we just decided to take the opportunity to rebrand and call ourselves Love, Bonito. Mm. So like you said, it's really like a sign-off, you know, every experience that we create, every product that we create is a sign off, like with Love, Bonito. So that was how it was born. And I think to your question on like now, you know, do we intend to or do we have plans to change the name? I think no. We have also through, you know, the decade, 14 years now, you know, we have built so much value into the name.
Yeah.
And it's something that is also very close to our heart. So no plans on changing the name.
Yeah, it's developed into this household name that has a ring on its own.
Yeah.
People know the brand immediately in Singapore when you mention it. Nobody really questions it anymore. And obviously you guys have so much physical presence right now with all your stores.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a singular mission for the brand when you first started it, right? I think you mentioned this in a past interview before. It's to let Asian women stand taller, speak louder, and shine brighter with the right clothing. Has that mission changed or evolved?
When we first started in 2010, our mission was sharing the love of fashion, you know, and that was really how it was in the beginning. Three of us coming together, we love dressing up, we love having fun, we love putting outfits together, and then we just decided to start something that we could, you know, also be really excited about and passionate about. And over the years, you know, through building Love Bonito, we realized that, hey, you know, there's a reason why we're so particular about the way an outfit looks and feels on a woman. To us, you know, what's important is that it doesn't just look good on the mannequin, it doesn't just look good on the model, it has to feel good as well. And the difference is, of course, unlike our peers in the industry, we do not just use fit mannequin blocks whenever we do fitting sessions. We actually use real women with real figures across different sizes to come down to try each and every piece to ensure that, okay, she not only looks good, she moves around, she's comfortable, she's running around, the outfit still, you know, serves her well.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's very important for us. And we realize that, you know, because there is so much power in a great outfit, it's not just a superficial outfit. When we look good, we feel good.
Yeah.
We stand a little taller, we speak a little louder, and we shine a little brighter. We truly believe that there is an immense psychological effect on the way we feel about ourselves.
Mm.
And that's what, you know, it has evolved to, from sharing the love of fashion to empowering women through style. And today, I think for us, when we create an outfit, really is to bring her through the different seasons of her life, to be able to give her that confidence she needs when she goes for her job presentation, or she, you know, is on her wedding anniversary or first date and things like that. We want to be able to empower women to be her best self and come into her own through Love Bonito. Yeah. Mm. So we hope to be able to journey with a woman through the different seasons and facets of her life.
Yeah. I also feel like clothing should feel like second skin, right? You shouldn't have to fuss about it throughout the day. Yeah. You shouldn't have to worry about how it feels on your body or how it looks on you.
Yeah.
Because if you have to focus on that, you can't focus on any other things.
Exactly.
Right?
That's exactly right. And, you know, that's what we also really hope to be able to achieve with women. Like when you put it on, you know, and then they're all ready to conquer their day or face their fears.
Yeah. So Love Bonito's slogan or your hashtag is discover, embrace, bloom, come into your own.
Yeah.
How do you feel like you're helping women face their everyday challenges better?
I think dressing up is such a great form of self-expression. You know, for example, a piece of clothing item can be paired, styled, worn differently by two very different women with different personalities, different edge, different style. And it's not just to compare ourselves with others and wear whatever someone else's wear that looks good on her. It's really an inward introspection of, okay, what looks good on me? What feels best for me? What am I most comfortable in? And I think that's what we want to help women journey through, because I think for us, we believe that it starts from there. When you understand yourself, when you discover who you are, your style, your inclinations, and it can evolve along the years. You know, it can help you truly embrace who you are, all your quirks, your personalities, you know, your color choices, for example, and it can lead to then you ultimately, at the end of the day, being confident enough to fully become who you were meant to be.
Yeah. So you were one of the first online brands, if not the first online brand, catering to Asian women, right?
Yeah.
Providing for the Asian fit in Singapore. Mm. And you've obviously skyrocketed to popularity since then, because your clothes just work for people in this part of the region.
Yeah.
Have you seen how Asian women perceive style or fashion or body image evolving through the times?
Mm-hmm.
Because you've been in this business for almost 20 years now.
Yes.
How has it changed since you first started?
Great question. I think in general, right, fashion aside, I think the mindset of women, especially in Asia, I think through the last two decades, we've become a lot more confident. We've become a lot less shy. I say that because I think a lot of the times, back when I first started also, you know, whether at work, in life, we tend to not want to stand out in that sense. You know, we tend to, you know, play down too much on, you know, our strengths, our achievements, who we are. We just want to fit into the wallpaper. And I'm speaking generally and also maybe for myself. And I think over the years, you know, especially with examples all over the world of strong women leaders, right? Strong women stories who are excelling in the different industries, whether in corporate, on the entrepreneur world, or even in the media world, right? We also see women coming up and really becoming more independent also and becoming more confident in just having a voice of her own. And I think that's something that's very encouraging for us as well, because we see women, you know, being bolder, being more daring to really make her own mark in this world.
Mm.
And I think that's something that's very encouraging for us as a brand, to really come alongside women through this journey of, you know, self-confidence, self-expression, and realizing that, yes, we are worthy, we deserve to have a place in this world, and we deserve to have our own voice. And I think that's something that I really see a shift in Asia, primarily, especially in the last two decades.
Yeah. I mean, as an Asian woman yourself, how has your experience or your perception evolved since you first started? You were a new business owner.
Yeah.
And now you're a seasoned business owner. How has it changed?
I think for sure when I first started, it was also very much less self-assured, you know, and like, oh, you know, will they listen to me? Does what I say matter, you know, and things like that. Because two decades ago, the people fronting businesses primarily were still dominated by men, you know. And you also doubt yourself, like, okay, am I really meant to do this? When you face rejections, you know, when you have challenges up against you, it really does make us doubt ourselves. But I think also over the years, you learn through being quietly confident that, hey, you have a voice, and hey, you have a point of view that matters in this world. And it really encourages us to, you know, speak up, to also be seen on the table.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that is very important. I realize that we as women also should lead by example. And of course, you know, to own that voice as well.
Okay. So you said that the fashion industry is the vehicle by which we we reach out to communities of women and journeys alongside them, right? You journey alongside them.
Yeah.
Can you share what your approach is with our listeners and how they might apply a purpose-driven approach to their idea of business?
I truly believe that, you know, every business has to have a why. And the why goes beyond the products.
Mm.
So for Love Bonito, fashion is just a vehicle for us to reach out to women. At the end of the day, you know, who we really care about and the core of our business is women.
Mm.
And whatever that we do, we think of her, we, you know, want to deeply understand her, and we will never lose sight of, you know, who she is, what she's interested in, and things like that. And I think that's what keeps the business alive at the end of the day, if you have your target audience at the center of what you do. And then that helps you to then, after that, create products or experiences that would really speak to her, the values, what she cares about.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I know I mean when I say also that at the end of the day, Love Bonito is not just in the business of fashion. We're ultimately in the business of women.
Mm.
And that brings our focus back to who she is, what does she want, what is she looking for, what is she going through in her life right now, and how can we create products that can journey with her through the different seasons.
Okay. And I mean, I think a lot of people like to say that they design for customers and you need to listen to your customers and you need to have them in mind, right, when you're designing something. How does Love Bonito or you personally, Rachel, do that for your customers in order to make sure that you are really designing for them and meeting their needs?
So every week, you know, one of the reasons why we also have physical stores is because we also, it's a great space for us to really, number one, observe customers' habits and for example, what they wear into the store, what they're carrying, you know, is it, if she's carrying coffee, is it Starbucks, is it Coffee Bean? Why? I think there's a difference also. And it's little touch points like that that help us constantly understand our customers. So for example, in store, you know, every time after each shift, the retail team will also, and there's a Google sheet where they will key in any specific observations or any specific feedback from customers today that they experience. That sheet is then shared to the rest of us in the organization and also specifically to the design team and the commercial team that really reads through the feedback. And every week, we try every week to go to the store to experience it for ourselves, to observe, you know, how the customers are acting, what's the feedback from the store, and then take that to how we create for our customers at the end of the day. So there is this feedback loop that we have that, you know, really allows us to continue to stay in tune with our customers and remember that at the end of the day, you know, it's feedback that is most important, and we review all of that together. So little rituals like that, for example, is something that really helps us constantly sharpen ourselves to what she wants through her products.
That's amazing. Okay, so you have an Excel sheet that actually spreads through.
Yeah, we do.
And shares
feedback, like what's some common feedback that we've been getting? Is there a certain feedback on a certain SKU? So for a certain product design. So for example, you know, when a customer walks out of fitting room, we try as best as we can to also ask her, oh, how do you feel about the pieces? Why is it that you're going to buy it? Or why is it that you're not going to buy it? You know, all these things are very important for us to be able to do better for our customers, because we realize at the end of the day, online data can only tell us what's working, what's not working. But it's really going down to speaking to our customers and understanding her that allows us to deeply understand, oh, why this is working and why this is not working.
Yeah.
And that helps us to then, you know, further spend our efforts on the right areas.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Okay. So you once defined success by quoting the American philosopher, Ralph Waldo Emerson. You said, to be yourself in a world that's constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest achievement.
Yeah.
Is that how you would still define success today?
Yes. I think at the end of the day, for me, success is a really internal journey. It's not just about accumulation of wealth or achievement or material goods. While I think, you know, that is maybe one way that someone can measure success, I think at the end of the day, like the quote that Ralph Waldo Emerson said, right? The greatest accomplishment in life at the end of the day is not having the biggest house or, you know, driving the fanciest car. The greatest accomplishment in life at the end of the day is that we were able to stay true to ourselves and really understand deeply why we are on this earth for. I truly believe that we're all created for a different purpose, and we all have very, very different superpowers, very different strengths, and very different weaknesses. And we're all meant to discover what that is, hone into our superpowers, and surround ourselves with people differently abled from us to do great things together. So for me, you know, the whole journey has been about looking inward and asking myself, who am I? What drives me? What are my principles? What do I really value? What are my key strengths that I can bring to the table? And what are some areas that I need people smarter and better than me, you know, to be able to help complement and do greater things together? I think at the end of the day, for me, that is a question. And that for me, if I can stay true to who I am and continue working on myself to become a better version of myself, that for me is success.
So you've been in the startup business longer than many founders out there. Almost 20 years, right?
Yeah.
So you've been through ups and downs. What would you say was or has been one of the biggest challenges you've had to face in your career growing this business?
By far, the biggest challenge I've had to face is getting over myself. I always believe that we are our biggest obstacles. We are our biggest mountains. If I can conquer myself, I can get over myself, I can find the strength to get over anything. And what I mean is, you know, even things like not being easily offended, not taking things personally, taking the time to reframe my mindset when I look at a certain challenge, when I look at an obstacle, when I look at a failure or a setback, how can I reframe that to pick myself up and go again and try again? I think truly the definition of really perseverance, resilience is, you know, you fall down 7 times and you get up 8 times. And I think that is truly what, you know, important in this journey of entrepreneurship, because it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And there will be tough times. There's going to be so many tough times. But if you can get over yourself, if you can reframe your mind, if you can continuously work on your mental muscle, mental strength, to be able to pick yourself up again and again and dust yourself off, then to me, that is something that we will be able to keep going and going through different adventures. I think it's not so much of like what has been the biggest challenge in terms of like specific challenges, because there will be different kinds of challenges, and the challenges just seem to get bigger as you go further. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I think it's like climbing Mount Everest, right? It is a mental game more than anything. And that's how I also view life, and I view entrepreneurship or just the journey of life. It is a mental game at the end of the day. If you think you can or you can't, Henry Ford says, you are most likely right. So how can I reframe my, how can I conquer myself? How can I conquer that self-talk, that negative self-talk in my mind at the end of the day to face my challenges, right? I really hold true to something that one of my mentors told me early on in my journey. He said, Rach, when things go well, don't let it get to your head. When things don't go well, don't let it get to your heart. And I think that is such an important reminder for me. Equanimity, stay grounded. And even riding the waves of life, how can you not be tossed around by yeah. it? And I think that to me, if we can conquer that, we will find the strength to be able to conquer our challenges in life.
It's easy to get caught up with the emotions of the moment, right?
It is, of course. And it's easy to be easily offended by a rejection or something someone said.
To take something personally.
Absolutely. Okay. And for it to, you know, take space in your heart, let it eat you up. And I think, you know, yeah, take your work seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. I think that's something that's really important.
That. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Were there any scary moments that you experienced that you wouldn't wish on other founders?
Wow. Not sure what scary moments specifically, but I think for sure every founder, we all go through different challenges in life, right? Whether is it specific business related or team people related at the end of the day. But I think, you know, maybe a scary moment is like, for me, almost losing my marriage because of my own inability to really juggle the balls well, the balls of life or the roles that I play in life well. Mm. And what I mean is, I think as a founder, there are different in seasons where we have to be absolutely intense, and there are different seasons where we really have to learn to let go and then, you know, pick it up another time. And I think for me, you know, it's really learning when each season is, when to let go, when to intensify, and when to focus on important glass balls that I can't afford to drop. Because if the glass balls drop, they would shatter and they will never be the same. And I think for me, it's also recognizing that, hey, honestly, it took me a long time to recognize that there is more to life than work.
Mm.
And there is this quote that says, if you want to be first rate at your work, work can't be all that you are. You also need to be able to explore and find growth, excitement, adventures in different parts of your life. And I think that for me is such a great reminder that, hey, while work is important, don't let it consume all of you at the expense of what's important to you as well.
Mm.
And what's important to me as well is my marriage, my kids, my personal well-being. So I think, you know, I think that's something that, yeah, we as founders or even like leaders, we just have to remember.
Was there a particular moment or incident that made you realize, okay, maybe I need to prioritize myself and my marriage a little bit more?
Yeah. I think as founders, we always, you know, have immense capacity and higher threshold for pain than normal, I would say.
You push yourself to the limit.
Yeah, right? And yeah. Maybe, you know,
even beyond the limit.
Mm-hmm. And we maybe tend to be able to take it, but that's not healthy, right? So I think it's important to recognize and be able to draw boundaries in that sense so that you can constantly also find ways to fill your cup, because we can't pour from an empty cup. And I think the other one for me, it's more personal, is also like, you know, one day, I think this was already now 2 years ago, but my husband, Leo, there was a period of disconnection for us, you know, 1.5, 2 years ago, where I felt like, you know, with this new season of my life, I'm a new mom, learning to juggle, back then with my first kid. And I felt like I gave all of myself to work, to my teams, to my kid, but I would leave the scraps of my energy for my husband. Mm-hmm. When he wanted to connect or have a chat, I would always be too tired, you know. I don't have the energy or the strength to respond thoughtfully. And so I remember one day I landed on the work trip, and then I received an email from my husband, and the title, it says, A Cry for Help. And that was when it really hit me, because he wrote a whole long email expressing how we are disconnected, and he feels like, you know, I don't take the effort to connect with him anymore. He would hear updates about my company and the new store openings from our LinkedIn page instead of hearing from me. And it really broke my heart, because then, you know, I asked myself, like, is this really what I want in life? Would I be happy at the end of the day if I had a great business, you know, but not a great marriage. Is this really what I want? And that was an important turning point for me to be honest with myself and to recognize that and to come back again, you know, come back to myself, come back to my marriage. So that was a real wake-up call for me.
Did he ever share why he chose to send you an email instead of a text message?
Oh, yes. He knows that text can be very stressful. Like, I will feel the need to respond because once you have two blue ticks, you know. And he also wanted to also not rush me into a response by sending an email. And I really appreciated that. Yeah.
Yeah. He knows you very well.
Yes, indeed.
How do you personally deal with disagreements with your co-founders or maybe now Dion, your CEO?
Well, how I deal with disagreements or conflict is actually, you know, taking the time to have a conversation out of that office setting. So I think Dion and I were very similar in that sense that if something is up, we will need to talk through it. Mm. And we will just like lay everything out on each other and give each other that space to be seen, to be heard. And after that, then dissect it together. So I think my style is I like to talk it out and I like to talk it through and just, you know, hear me out. Let me unload everything. Because sometimes when I'm unloading, in the process of verbally unloading, I am solving it by myself and realizing certain things that I did not see previously. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. And do you usually trash it out immediately or do you take the time to think about what you want to say first?
So one of the main things that I've learned when it comes to communication or bringing up a thorny conversation is that timing is everything. And just like in relationships and marriage, you know, there'll be times where I feel so strongly about something or perhaps I'm so unhappy about something or something is really bothering me. Like, do I bring it up now? Is this the best time? You know, firstly, I also recognize, and this is the same, right? Whether is it with Dion or Leo, I also want to recognize that, okay, am I tired? Is this the best time for me? Am I in the right head and mind space and heart space? Mm-hmm. And secondly, for that person, how is that person feeling? Is she rushed? You know, is she tired as well? Because I want to be able to, for both of us to be as clear-headed as possible. And secondly, I realized timing is everything. Do I really have to address it now just to get it off my chest for my own selfish reason? Or can I wait a little longer so that we're both in a better space, you know, and you know, perhaps we have that privacy to really trash it out. And I think that to me, I remember I was reading a book and then there's this analogy of a banana. A banana tastes great when it's eaten at the right time. When it's ripe, you know, it's very yummy, it's juicy. But a banana, when eaten at the wrong time, when it's unripe, you know, it can be very hard, it can be very bitter, it's not great. And that analogy really reminded me that it's the same when you give a feedback, when you want to talk about something. Timing really matters. And that's something that I have to learn, to be more disciplined, to hold myself back, and to have that emotional maturity to wait and bring it up at the right time.
That's a really good tip, actually. Mm. So you spoke about Dion, right? Your CEO.
Yeah.
Who's a non-co-founder. Mm-hmm. But you feel like she's a co-founder.
Yeah.
Did it hit you one day that you're ready to let go and move on and pass the reins over to a non-founder?
Yeah. I think I've known pretty early on in my journey that, especially when I was on my own journey of like my personal journey of inner work and self-awareness and self-discovery. I was very clear on my strengths, my weaknesses, and what I needed on board with me to build this together. It was more on who is someone that I can really trust, who is aligned with me in mission, in values, and I trust you as a leader, I trust your character, I trust you as a person. It was hard to find that person who would be so invested in the business who is not a co-founder, like you said. And I think for me, I've known earlier on that in order for Love Bonito to reach its highest potential, I definitely need to bring someone smarter than me in different areas to be able to run this with me. And I use the word smarter loosely. It's not just about having higher IQ. I think it's also more about where are we differently able? You know, where are we complementary? And I think especially when Love Bonito goes through the different stages of growth from a startup, you know, to, you know, SME, to a scale-up growth stage, it requires different caliber of leadership. It requires us to switch gears. And I think for me, it's recognizing who is someone that I can bring on to be able to grow through that with me.
Mm, I think that's so true. Mm. Because different phases of a company requires different
types of leaders, yes.
Different types of mindsets, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And what's one thing that you wish you knew before when you first started that you know now?
I wish I knew that the greatest power we can actually have is in choosing how we respond. I think life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we choose to respond. We can have, you know, the worst news, the greatest setback, the scariest failures. But it's how you pick yourself up and what you tell yourself and how you choose to respond to that failure, that setback, that challenge, that rejection, that makes or break this journey.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you've gone through various rounds of successful funding, right? Including a CVC investment of 50 million in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So that was your latest fundraise.
Yes, that's
round.
Right.
What was your first pitch to an investor like? Do you remember that moment?
Back then?
Yeah.
Back in 2015, you know, an investor approached us, Hien from Open Space. And he was the one that was sort of pitching to us to, you know, we should work together. We want to bring you to greater heights, which I'm so glad we eventually did because Hien and his team completely changed the trajectory of the business for us. So back then, 2015, we didn't even think of like funding, investors, raising funds. And I'm so glad that Hien opened that door for us. But I would say subsequently after that, when we wanted to raise funds, the first pitch was more like, you know,
were you nervous?
For sure. For sure, right?
How long did you work on your pitch deck?
I'm sure we worked like, you know, late hours practicing nonstop and finding what the right angle to storytell is. I think really back then, you know, the real issue that we had was also that, hey, no one is really catering to the Asian women. And here's why the world needs Love Bonito.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that was your USP.
Yeah,
right,
that was the angle that we used, yeah.
And obviously the reality is that female entrepreneurs still get a lot less funding than male entrepreneurs, right? Even today, globally, whether it's Asia, yeah, Singapore, or wherever in the world. What was your personal experience like? And has that experience changed at all since, yeah, you first started pitching?
I think female founders proportionately do get less, you know, funding, like you said. But I think the stats also show that female founders are more productive when it comes to, you know, being invested in, the returns that they give.
Mm.
So that's something that is really encouraging for us female founders. When I first started, especially in the very early days, you know, people were almost like, oh, okay, is someone else coming? Almost expecting like a male figure to also represent us on the executive leadership team. So, yeah, but today, of course, it's becoming more of a norm. Young entrepreneurs, young women entrepreneurs. So very glad that we also sort of like, I would say, paved the way for that in some form, yes.
Mm. Okay. What is one thing or one question you wish interviewers would ask you more?
I wish that interviewers would focus also more on the internal journey of an entrepreneur's life. I think it takes more than great strategy, a great business plan, a great business model to have a successful business. I think there is so much that goes inside the people running the business that makes a business successful.
Mm.
Or at least keeps it growing. I define successful as, you know, a business that grows. Anything that grows is successful for me. So I think, yeah, I wish people would focus more on that. There's so much I can go on about the internal journey, you know, or the work that has to be done. Because I truly believe, as Lao Tzu said, that leading others is strength, but mastering yourself, that's true power. And I wish people will focus more on that. Because the message out there should not just be about how can I be the best entrepreneur, have the best idea, have the best strategy, have the best whatever. But it should really be about how can I work on myself constantly to be the best version of myself, my character, everything, mental strength, tenacity, resilience, all these can be built. And I think that's the most important for me. Yeah.
And I think that's a great place for us to actually end the podcast. Thank you so much, Rachel,
thank
for
you,
joining
Xiaowei,
us on Crazy Smart Asia.
Thank you for having me. I had so much fun with you.
That's it for yet another episode of Crazy Smart Asia. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to follow us wherever you're listening to this. Crazy Smart Asia is produced by Josie Kota and edited, mixed, and mastered by Ben Beheshti. Genty's digital editor is Valerie Lim. Crazy Smart Asia is hosted by me, Chong Xiaowei. In the meantime, do remember,
take your work seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously.
See you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.